It's now 8:23 News Radio WJPF. I had the opportunity to meet somebody new last week, and I'm glad that I'm able to share them with you as well. Carrie Lajadal. Did I get that right, Carrie? I've been practicing all weekend, so.
You're close enough. We're good.
Carrie said everybody. Lajadal. Is that right?
Yep. There you go.
There we go. She's with Caregivers for Compromise. We've got a lot to cover here this morning with Carrie. I spoke to her in the middle of last week after having a friend supply this phone number. As you can tell from the name of the organization, Caregivers for Compromise, the issue caregivers is in particular. So, Carrie, first off, Caregivers for Compromise, how did this group start? Because interesting story.
So this the group started by a lady named Mary Daniels in Florida. Her husband is in a memory care facility down there. And once COVID-19 hit, all long-term care facilities in the country have been put under lockdown for over 6 months, meaning zero visitors inside up until late May, early June. Some facilities were allowing outside visits, but the majority are only allowing window visits. So our family members and our loved ones are suffering the consequences of no interaction with their family, no hugs, no one to watch over them.
Right.
And Mary took a different route. She took a job in her husband's memory care facility, washing dishes two nights a week after she worked her full-time job, just so she could see her husband.
You know, it's interesting, Carrie, when you talk about this in these window visits and the extent that people will go to visit, it's because they know the effects of isolation. If you're there, if your loved one is in some type of cognitive failure, that interaction is crucial for retaining as much as you can of yourself.
Very much so. My case is a little different than a lot of people's. Mine is my 32-year-old son that is developmentally delayed. And, you know, so everyone thinks of long-term care and they think of mom and dad or grandma and grandpa, but there's children, little kids, you know, and then there's all the adults with developmental disabilities that at some point in their life wind up in long-term care.
I got to be honest with you, Carrie. I had not thought about people in your position until I had the opportunity to meet and talk with you. It's every time I talk to someone else in this position, I get another jolt. Let me give you an example. I was talking to a woman last week who's deeply concerned about her mother. Says she doesn't seem to be getting the care. She says, I'm really bothered by the fact that she's isolated, but whenever I was able to contact her, and she didn't have her hearing aids in, so she was even further isolated by not being able to hear.
And that's 100% correct. I mean, it's, you know, my son cognitively is very aware, orientated, able to tell people what he needs, but he has no short-term memory, so... Ooh, when his cell phone isn't in front of him where it should be. I mean, I've bought, just since COVID started, the amount of technology I've bought to try to communicate with my son to make it easier. And even that, there's a lot of times he'll need assistance, and it's getting somebody to go in and hit a button for him.
Right.
You know, so you can turn on Skype or turn on what he needs so he can not be isolated from the world. I mean, and we're not just talking that these people have been isolated into their facility. They've been isolated for the most part in their room for 6 months.
Right. And that's why that change when it came to some locations on communal dining be allowed again. I'd visited a friend at the Carbondale long-term care facility, and I could clear, because I went in the morning and she's watching the clock, and I know something important's happening. It's because it's lunch and she gets to see all of her friends. So I walked with her down to the dinner table, and there are all of her friends waiting for it. That's one of the most important parts of her day, was being able to see all of her friends at dinner. Eating and some of these other activities are pretty important when you realize they're the keystones of your day.
Well, exactly. Eating, especially in this country, eating is a social event. You know, so when you're living in a facility like that, it even becomes more important, because it's not only just that more of the residents are there, more of the staff is around at that time too. If they want, you know, if there's parts of the staff they want to spend time with or communicate, because they're all down there assisting. So by putting everyone back in their rooms and eating for 6 months in their rooms, you know, you've lost everything from somebody monitoring them, because they can't watch 100% of the time, monitoring them to make sure they're eating their food, not dropping it, not, you know, making sure they're chewing and swallowing, because there's all these issues that come along with it.
And there are a lot of them, too. Carrie Legendahl is joining us, Caregivers for Compromise. When I look at the goals of your organization, I see a very long list. But here's the thing. Some of the issues that you just talked about, the people who run those facilities are convinced, what if I'm wrong about this or that, right? That's always out there second questioning themselves. But they believe these decisions are in the best interest of the health, the physical health of the patients. Well, you know, we can't do this or that because we don't want to spread COVID-19. And in some cases, long-term care facilities have their own problems with staffing because of illness.
Well, and originally it made sense to lock them down, keep them safe, keep the virus out of the building. That was until we proved that that doesn't work. For over 40% of the deaths in the United States from COVID are long-term care related, whether it's staff or resident. So you have that right there proved you cannot keep it out of the buildings. You know, most of us family members are living isolated lives and doing what we have to, if there's any opportunity to see our loved ones, make sure we're safe. But you have staff who still has to live a life. So some of them are working two jobs in two facilities. Some of them, you know, just are going about life, and they're bringing the virus in anyway.
Okay, let's talk about this. This is interesting. Caregivers for Compromise, all right? The caregivers is an essential word here, but when I listen to you talk, all right, you've got this point of view, but you're willing to compromise. It's right in your name. What is it that you think you can accomplish in compromise?
Well, we need, first of all, to compromise that bare minimum, every resident in a long-term care facility, child, adult, regardless, needs to have two essential caregivers from the day they move in. So that way, no matter what happens, those two people are guaranteed access to their loved one, regardless of a COVID status, regardless if we have another pandemic down the road. Those, you know, the caregivers will agree to, you know, if a staff is being required to test, we would follow those guidelines. Whatever PPE a staff is required, we would follow those guidelines.
Ah.
Give us access to our family, and not only are we going to make it easier for the facility, because then you have more hands on deck to help, which is what they want, and our loved ones are not going to suffer. If you look at statistics from 2019 to 2020, for people with dementia, there has been a 20% increase in death rates in those same from March to September because of the isolation, because of the lack of stimulation, and the lack of mobility.
I find this interesting. I mean, I really do. When you set up an establishment with a long-term care facility, two essential caregivers are on the list. They can come in, they can assist, and take some of the pressure off the staff while still encouraging that personal connection, as hard as it may be, whether it's dementia. I think today is Alzheimer's Day, matter of fact, whether it's Alzheimer's or some other type of cognitive failure there, some type of illness, long-term care, somebody that right. goes in there, that you're willing to compromise and assist. Now, in one of the letters that I had seen from your organization, in particular from you, you were looking for members of the legislature to support you. Have you had any luck with that?
I've had very little. I have two state representatives that are going to do a Zoom call with us tomorrow morning and to see what they can do to help. We desperately need legislators, congressmen, senators, anybody to help us get this in front of Dr. Zike and onto the governor's desk to help us. All we're asking for is to put a task force in place. The same thing Florida did, Texas is done, Indiana's done. Put rules in place to help protect us or help protect our loved ones, but help us get in. the Centers for Medicaid and Medicare just issued new guidelines on Thursday, which are giving us a little more access. They are still nowhere near what they need to be.
Well, I talked to another individual's mother is in long-term care, and they were just happy that the window visits had returned. They were happy with so little. When I looked at one of the letters, caring for, we're talking about caregivers for compromise, we're asking, maybe even begging officials in Illinois to start a task force to establish an essential caregivers program that will put our loved ones' needs first to help ensure both their mental and physical well-being. That mental aspect is hard to qualify for some people unless you've experienced it. And I mean, that seems to be where I hear so much of the concern is I'm watching my mother, my father's mental health degrade due to the isolation, being locked in a room. I'm not locked in a room, required to stay in the room. I don't want to misrepresent anything here. And that's the really the one that I hear most of. And then others saying, I'd like to at least see the records so I know how my mother or father or grandma or granddad are being taken care of inside the long term. I want to be able to know because there's a record kept about their health. I want to see that. And the people have even had difficulty doing getting the information so they can help track along and ensure that their parents are in good health.
Well, and that's because facilities want to take the avenue that once you've put your loved one in there, oh, don't worry, we'll just take care of all their medical. No, that is not what has happened. Families still want part of it. I have a child with 12 specialists. I go to every doctor's appointment. I am in contact with his doctors. Yes, you guys do need to be in contact with them, but you do not supersede me. You do not sidestep me. I am still the essential part of his life.
Right.
And we are losing access in every way because, you know, let's say like my son's diabetic also. So if we have a day that his blood sugar is extraordinarily low and nobody's told me, and then all of a sudden I hear something else happens, I'm like, okay, what led up to this?
Right.
Oh, it's because they forgot to tell me he was 45 this morning, you know, as an example.
Yeah.
So, you know, and where my son is very good. They take great care of him. But these are things that can happen and do happen everywhere. You know, there's only so much staff, and most of the time facilities are short-staffed and at no fault of their own. They cannot hire enough people. They cannot keep enough people.
Carrie, as we close up today, you're appealing to legislators for help so that you can, and I really do admire this part of compromise because I see it repeatedly in the documentation that I was supplied from your organization. I mean, there's a lot of compromise here. It's not demands. We're begging for your help. Please help me with my parents. An appeal that I would hate to think that your appeal falls on deaf ears in Springfield.
Well, and I've even tried going through the amount of people I've emailed all around the state of Illinois or tried to call is unbelievable. Everybody from Dr. Zeke all the way down. You know, you'll get a few random, oh, we understand responses, but no answers. But even, I mean, nobody in Illinois can email our director of public health because when you try to email her, you get an auto response saying, contact this person if it's for this or this person if it's for that because I don't have time to check my email. I've been getting the same auto response from her email system for 6 months.
I just got a note from a friend of mine, a mutual friend apparently, Jill, who says, I love Carrie and have been helping her ask a rhetorical question to make the point that staff are impossible to track outside of work. If a staff can go to Walmart and out to eat, what makes family members a bigger threat to visit? So I want to thank Jill for sending that note in this morning.
Also, she is correct.
Go ahead.
Because I actually went to my son's facility over this issue. Of you're not allowing us in, here's my documentation from Facebook showing you your staff was here, your staff was there, no mask, no social distancing, and, you know, but I'm not allowed in.
Right.
It makes no sense. It is, you know, and like I said, my son receives great care, but people still need to live their lives, and the first couple months, the staff was, you know, overly cautious, and they were really not living lives. But that only is going to last for so long, no matter where you are and no matter how dedicated you are.
Here's a note that's just come in. It says, I have seen my mother slip, mentally over the last several months. She was a very social person and hasn't ever been in a car in over 6 months. Her facility stopped visits. It's been awful. Carrie, I applaud your efforts. And I've also, while you were just speaking, I texted some of the legislators here just a moment ago to ask them if you're willing to help your organization. So we'll see if we get a response from those folks as well. Carrie, before I close, if people are interested in getting in on Caregivers for Compromise, supporting you, becoming a part of the organization, or learning about more what they can do for their parents and grandparents, how would they get a hold of you? How would they get a hold of the organization? Where would they learn more?
So go on to Facebook and look up Caregivers for Compromise Illinois. There's both a national and a state page. Everything we're doing for Illinois is on our Illinois page. We have a Zoom call tomorrow morning at 9 a.m. that will have two state representatives and a couple ombudsmen on there with us that we're going to hopefully get enough together to get somebody to start working towards getting the governor to let us do a task force.